Elementary music teacher friend, you love what you do, but you might feel unappreciated and, in fact, unseen some days. You may even feel like you're on a music teacher island and just want to connect with other music teachers who can relate to both your struggles and wins when it comes to teaching elementary music. I get you and understand completely the feelings you're having. That's why each and every week, the Elementary Music Teacher Podcast will provide you with solo and guest episodes that will help you realize you're not alone in your music teaching journey. Throughout each episode, my goal is for you to be able to walk away with actionable steps and ideas to help you feel like you're ready to take on the new week with whatever challenges may be thrown your way. Hi, I'm your host, Jessica Paresta, and I'm so glad you're here. Whether you're at home, in your car, in the shower, or wherever else you're listening, grab your cup of coffee or whatever other beverage is nearby and listen in to the Elementary Music Teacher Podcast. I am so beyond excited to have Carissa Duncanson joining me today on the Elementary Music Teacher Podcast. She is seriously such a breath of fresh air, such a delight to talk to, and she is just so sweet and doing such amazing things in the music ed world. She is on the podcast today to talk about inclusion and literature in the music room, and I love this conversation. It's sometimes the hard conversations that are obviously difficult to have, but they're needed. And having her on here and the way she presents different ideas and the way she talks about the hard issues and how she definitely works with all learners, no matter their skin color or where they're from, and helps her students to all feel included in her music room is so important. And she breaks down how she does that in this episode and why it's important for all music teachers to do that as well. I love the way she talks about literature in the music room and how to do it. How do you go about finding books? How do you make sure the books you bring into your music room, as well as everything else that you include in your music instruction, makes all kids feel seen and heard and included? And she is great with talking about literature, and I love the way she presents it and breaks it down in this episode. Carissa has taught K to fifth grade general music in the Metro Detroit area for 6 years. She's born and raised in Michigan, and she began her musical journey in elementary school. Throughout her childhood, Carissa participated in choirs, bands, and theater within her community and schools. She earned a Bachelor of Music and Vocal Education from Wayne State University and currently teaches at McDonald Elementary School in Detroit. As a professional, Carissa has performed and presented throughout the Metro Detroit area, ranging from state conferences to local PD workshops. Being an avid advocate for music education, Ms. Duncanson has served on multiple boards for music education associations. In her spare time, she loves to craft, sew, and go on walks with her husband and dog, Maisie. You guys are going to get such knowledge bombs dropped in this episode, and my hope is that you walk away feeling refreshed and ready to take on a new week and with new ideas you can begin implementing into your own classroom. So without further ado, let's go ahead and get into this episode with the amazing Carissa Duncanson. Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. You are in for a treat today. I am joined by the amazing Carissa, and we are going to have an amazing conversation. I am so looking forward to having you on the podcast, Carissa. I've been wanting to invite you on for a while. I just needed to kind of get to the point where I could have some guests on again. And so I'm just looking forward to this conversation. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Jessica. I'm really excited to be here and talk about music and school and children and all the things that we love. So thank you for having me.
Yeah. So let's just start by having you tell us a little bit about yourself. Why did you become a music teacher, and anything else you want the listeners to know today?
Sure. So like Jessica said, my name is Carissa Duncanson, and you might know me from my social media handle, Music at Mrs. Dunk. But my name is Carissa, so you can call me Carissa. I grew up in Michigan. I kind of bopped around all throughout the state. So I did my elementary years in northern Michigan, which is very different than West Michigan, which is where I had my middle school and high school experience. And then after high school, I went on to the east side of the state of Michigan, where I moved to Detroit and went to college. I went to Wayne State University, a little shout out there to my alumni, and decided to stay, got my first teaching job, and I've been in the Metro Detroit area for over 10 years now. So awesome. it's my new home. So
awesome. Mm-hmm. So you teach K to fifth. Is that your job description?
Yep. I currently teach kindergarten through fifth grade.
Okay.
General. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Right outside of Detroit.
Okay. That's awesome. So I wanted to start by asking you about inclusion. The conversation today is going to be about inclusion in literature. So I want you to just kind of explain to the listeners about what inclusion in life and in the music room, what does that look like, or any other conversations you want to have around inclusion in music?
Sure. So I think inclusion is a really important tool that each teacher, regardless of subject area, needs to incorporate within their classroom culture. And for me, inclusion is allowing every child to feel and to know that they have worth and that their teachers see them fully. So see their differences, see their nationalities, see the languages, and embrace that. One of the things that I think made me really maybe not know how important it was, but it made me have a longing for inclusion was my own experience as a student. I remember at a very young age, I grew up in so my schooling experience, I was very frequently the only child of color. And so, and for the listeners, I am a biracial adoptee, but from just looking at me, you see a black child at the time, a black woman. So it was really, I stood out. And I remember being very young in elementary age, and then as I got into middle school, I had teachers tell me, well, Carissa, we don't see you. We don't see you as different. We don't see that. Literally right after kids were making fun of my hair or my skin. So the importance of inclusion came to me because of my experience as a child, not feeling like I was included or of worth or truly seen, for my differences. So for me, inclusion is making sure every child feels that their differences or the pieces of their identity that may separate them from their classmates or from you as the teacher, those differences, those pieces of their identity are seen and celebrated and seen being in the literature that you're reading, the music that you're playing, the references that you make when discussing artists or musicians. Your children see themselves in the resources that you are giving your students. Mm-hmm. So that's what it means to me.
Love that so much. Oh my goodness. I just love your story. And thank you so much for being vulnerable, first of all, and sharing that. I wanted to ask you, so when a teacher says something like, oh, I don't see you any different, or there's no differences in here, we're all the same, to you, the child of color, you're probably hearing, well, wait, so you don't see me and my skin and everything about me that makes me different? And so teachers listening to this who have used those phrases, this is not a guilt trip. It's not you should feel bad, but at the same time, moving forward, it is important to kind of reevaluate the way they speak to children. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Words are so important, and children might not remember the exact verbiage that you use, but they're going to remember how they felt when you talk to them, especially about their own identity. So for me, I remember a specific situation in like seventh grade, a teacher had told me, well, we don't see you as different. And I just remember being like, you are a liar. Like, you lie.
Well, because you can see me, like, you know, yeah. Like, yeah, your like, eyes. Yeah.
That in that instance, that teacher had just witnessed me being bullied. So I was like, what are you talking about? So I think for teachers, I get it too. You want all of your children to feel like those little pieces of their identities shouldn't matter. They shouldn't be treated differently because of those categories of their identity, whether it be their nationality, their race, their gender, etc. Mm-hmm. But in reality, the world that we live in does. We are treated differently. Mm-hmm. And so a prompt that you could give teachers who are asking, like, well, what do I say? You could acknowledge and say, hey, you do have this, you do come from this country, or you do speak this language, or your skin color is a beautiful brown or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I, as your teacher, am not going to treat you differently because of that. So that is something we have to speak it, because kids know, they know when you're fluffing and when you're not. Mm-hmm. So being honest with them and giving them their truth, because their identity is their truth.
Yeah.
And when a teacher is telling them, well, we don't see that, you're denying them of their own self, of their own truth. Mm-hmm. And that's problematic.
Yeah. So don't just glance over it. And if you, as the child, are approaching that teacher saying, I'm being bullied, or they witnessed it, saying it happened, don't just move past it or say, oh, they didn't really mean it, or, oh, that's not really, it's not as bad of a situation as you thought it was, or something like that. Cause you need to acknowledge it. Like, you can't just move past those things. It's not okay. Cause that's just, you know, you got to be a leader in your classroom. Yeah,
absolutely. And when you model that for your, when you are modeling for the class, it's like, hey, we need to talk about this. Yeah. So-and-so does have this difference, or does have this, but we are going to still love them. We are still going to allow them to have a voice, or to share their idea, or whatever it may be. And bring it down to them. Model for your students. This is, we do discuss these things, and it's okay. Not like, oh no, we're talking about race. Well, yeah, it's part of, we have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's part of who we are.
Right. It shouldn't be an uncomfortable thing, because if kids aren't learning about it from their teachers, I'm sure someone at home is talking to them about it, but not always too, you know?
Not always.
And that's unfortunately, like, I know with my kids, they are aware. We do talk about it. Like, they have a cousin who is half black, and we've talked about it. They came to me one day, my middle son, and just like an innocent comment. It was very innocent, because kids are, you know, well, not all, but you know what I mean. They are observant. And he just said, why is Eden's skin color darker than mine? It was the first time ever at 7 years old he brought it up. And I was like, oh, so it's time to talk, you know? And I said, that's just the way God made her. But what do you think about that? Oh, I think it's pretty. And Eden was at my house. I was babysitting her, and she was like, yeah, and you're white. And he's like, yeah, and you're darker. And then he just went off and played. But just acknowledging it, and I didn't feel uncomfortable, because I think she's acknowledging, as they get older, they're acknowledging the differences, and it's okay to talk about it.
It's part of who she is. And so when we make some of these parts of our identities, when we try to like ignore them, or kind of push them to the wayside, we are in a way doing a disservice, because it's like we're not being truthful. Like, yeah, that's part of your niece's identity. And yes, she is brown. It's part of her, just like whatever her favorite color is, her favorite color. Right. That's part of who she is.
Right.
And we as adults need to help bring those parts of the conversation to allow children to know that it's okay to talk about these things, and we have to. And then also help them know when these conversations are in a place of potential bullying, or like when we're talking about race and identity and kids are making fun of. So that's a that's a different conversation, but they need to be able to understand the difference. But I mean, I don't know the specific studies, but there is, and I can speak on my own experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was 6 years old when I always knew, because my siblings are tow-headed, blonde, blue-eyed children. So like, I've always known that I was different. But like, I can recall being 6 years old and really understanding my race and knowing that I was different. Mm-hmm. And so it's really naive of us and not okay for us as adults to act like, well, kids don't see it, because they absolutely do.
Yeah. You they think just because they're do. Kids, I feel like sometimes people view kids as just not, like you said, like, oh, well, they don't know. They're too young. Oh, they don't see what's going on in the world. They're too young. Yeah, they do. Maybe not in the same way adults sees it. Of course not. Because you're going to keep it on a kid level, but they do notice. They have eyes. They can see things. They hear stuff. You know, the news is on. They see it. They know.
Yeah. Kids love to put things in boxes. And I mean, that's part of critical thinking. They're same different, right? What do babies do? Same different.
Right.
So like, this is, that's good. Like, yes, you notice that. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Like, mm-hmm. that's good. So, and you know, children, myself included, I didn't talk about things, especially with my parents, because it was like, ooh, no, like, we're not going to talk about her brown skin, because, you know, like, why are we afraid to have conversations about truths?
Yeah, I feel like sometimes it is like you said, they think they're going to make the child feel uncomfortable if I bring it up. Are they going to know how to talk back about it with me? Or is it going to make everyone else around them uncomfortable in this classroom setting? Or I don't want to single that child out, so we're just not going to talk about it. But that's the wrong approach. I think there is a good way to talk about it. It's not like you're singling them out going, okay, do we have a black student here? Everybody turn around and look at them. Let's all notice their color. Of course not do that. But there are ways to bring inclusion in your classroom that's like you already mentioned, and we're going to get into literature, but you said what you hang on your wall, the songs you're singing, talking about different cultures. So everybody feels seen in your classroom and making it aware. If someone has a conversation or ask a question, yeah, talk about it. There's just ways to handle it. But I feel like the teachers that don't talk about it at all are, I think a lot of it is just they need to spend some time growing in that area to get more comfortable about speaking about that or being aware of it.
I think like for us as musicians, we know that in order to be better at something, we have to practice it. Mm. And that's exactly what needs to happen here. Like you didn't start out with your instrument, like being like getting into the top ensemble or working with your specific private instructor. You weren't already at the top. Like you worked really hard to achieve that level of professional musicianship. Like that didn't just happen. The same thing needs to happen with discussions on inclusivity and race. We have to practice these conversations and model these conversations and listen to podcasts and read literature and really practice this type of conversation, because so many of us I'm throwing intent out the window. Like I know like people weren't intending to not be, to be exclusive. I don't think people were trying to be exclusive.
Right.
And that's part of the problem, right? That ignorance or that not knowing, we're done with that. We need to now be actively practicing and working on having these conversations and constantly having them and bringing them up because that's the only way we're going to get better. We have to practice. We have to practice.
That's so good. So good. And there's, you know, in your building, when you work with teachers who are just stuck in their ways with a lot of different things, like I've been teaching the same way for 30 years, so I'm not changing now. Well, you kind of have to like, it's okay to still shift what you're doing a little bit. Like, and with music teachers, when you said, look at the songs you're teaching, and I can't speak for every body in the world, but I don't think a lot of music teachers were intentionally trying to teach songs that were offensive, you know, but at the same time, now that you are aware, go and look at what you're teaching to your students. Right. It's so important. And those that are like, well, I already had my whole plan. I have a curriculum map. I have all my lesson plans mapped out for the year. I don't want to go back and redo it. Well, then, you know, that's frustrating because it's like, that's valuable to your students. You have to do that for them.
Right.
And I don't know. Have you seen that a little bit?
I have. And people are like, well, I'm so overwhelmed. I feel like I can't do anything. Well, take it one step at a time, just like your instrument. Like you have to take it one step at a time. So, okay. I know where this song comes from. I know who the people that it came from or whatever, mm-hmm. I know that this song is an appropriate song. That's where you start. Awesome job. You know the historical context of the song, you know the cultural context of the song, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And go from there. And then build your life. You know, like, it's not, yeah. And then when you are presenting a song, just check. Just look.
Yeah.
Ask a colleague. Ask. We are so connected, and especially right now with mm-hmm. the situation with COVID, like, we've been forced to kind of be solely online. There are so many resources that we can access to check ourselves. Mm-hmm. And if you are feeling overwhelmed, just start with one. Just
start yes, with one. That's good. That's good. Yeah. Just start somewhere. It's baby steps, you know, and I've had conversations with teachers I work with, and I tell them that when you were first year teacher, or if you are going into your first year teaching, you don't just know how to do everything. I mean, I did not. you learn as you go. And then you're like, oh, that didn't work. I'm going to try this instead. Oh, I'll try this. Or that didn't resonate well with my students. It's the same way this with COVID and learning how to teach online or whatever your school district asked you to do. But also with like reframing what you're teaching in to your students, the songs you're teaching. Like you said, if you look at something and you say, this isn't right. Or for me, a lot of times I can see the song lyrics and think, even a nursery rhyme. And I'm like, I remember going back at some nursery rhymes and looking at them and saying, this doesn't make sense. So when some of the words just don't make sense because they're old. And when I look it up and it's like, oh, that's not okay. What nursery rhyme could I plug in here instead? And that's what you do with any song. What song, okay, if I'm wanting to really focus on this concept, this teaching skill in my music room, what song could I plug in there instead? You know, there's so much literature out there. My gosh. So it's not a lack of saying, well, if I take this out, I'm not going to be able to have anything else to teach. Yeah, you do. There is so many. I mean, gosh, there's resources upon resources upon resources out there. It, like you said, it can't be overwhelming. Don't let it be overwhelming. Just, you know, as long as the goal is to get there, I think that's the starting point, is to say, I'm going to get there, but I can take it one lesson one day at a time. And if I mess up and I accidentally do teach a song that I probably shouldn't have taught, I'm going to give myself grace and just not do it again. It's fine.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely. That's one of the most human things about us. We make mistakes. And yes. what we do with them is what's important. Do we learn from them, or do we continuously allow them to happen? You know,
right.
You are in charge, or you have the choice to take ownership of that mistake and decide what you're going to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I completely agree. So I'm going to go ahead and shift here into talking about music and literature when it comes to inclusion. And so what do you want to tell our listeners about literature and inclusion? Any tips around that?
Yeah. So, Rudine Sims Bishop has, I'm going to paraphrase because I don't have her exact quote in front of me, but she is a professor at, the Ohio State University. Sorry,
you're fine.
Girl, so I'm like, I think they say the Ohio State University. Ohio State University. And she kind of coined this idea of allowing children to have three things when it comes to literature. There are three needs. And one of those is we as educators can create mirrors, windows, and sliding glass doors for our students. And mirrors are books and literature that allow our students to see themselves reflected in the story. Windows are books or literature that allow students to see others from their perspective, kind of looking out that window. Mm-hmm. And then the last perspective is sliding glass doors. And sliding glass doors are books that allow children to kind of open a door into a world or an opportunity that they might not have seen before. So I love to use this idea when thinking about inclusive literature. And you can do this as a teacher by, there's a couple things you can do. You can just think about your students and think about their identities, what their racial background is, what their cultural background is, what language, what nationality. Do you have children who who are LGBTQ, mm-hmm. are like, think about all of the identities that your students kind of fit themselves into, or, and sometimes it's not their choice, right? Some mm-hmm. of our identities are not our choice. It's just who we are. So think about those. And then when you are looking in your, at a bookstore or in your own school library, being selective with the literature choices that you are picking to read and to include in your room. Who is writing this story? Who's writing this perspective? Should you be picking a book about a Black experience written by a white person?
Mm,
now, I mean, this is my my notion, my mm-hmm. thinking, but mm-hmm. I would not want to share that point of view because
yeah.
it wouldn't be truly reflective.
Yeah.
And so just allowing your students to really truly see themselves. So who's writing it? Who's illustrating it? Will your students see themselves, or can you be that sliding glass door for them by picking a book that maybe they would they've never experienced Korean culture, X, Y, or Z? And when you pick that Korean book, who wrote it?
Yeah.
Is it written by an American person, yeah. or somebody who really truly doesn't understand Korean culture, or is it written by somebody who has lived that experience? I think that is one of the best gifts you can give your kids, is giving them resources, and specifically when talking about literature or music, mm-hmm. Giving them authentic resources, mm-hmm. so that they can truly feel included and truly see themselves or see their classmate who is
mm-hmm.
from a different category than themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something you just said that I don't think I ever have been very good at, is looking at who the author is. You see the title of the book, you see the pictures, and you see kids in there that you're wanting to represent different kids of different colors. Their author research part of it, girl, you just blew my mind, because that is so important. It is something I just kind of glanced over.
And it's not hard.
Yeah.
I mean, you can follow authors on Amazon. Like, so when you purchase a book, you can follow that author. Mm-hmm. You can, I mean, Google, like when people are like, oh, it's just so hard. Really?
It takes
one second. Hey, Siri. And my Siri just like woke up on me right
now. She's like, yeah.
What do you need? It is so simple. Just a quick, oh, okay, this is where this author is from. This is their experience. Most authors have websites with their bios and who they are and what they do. And this is not me saying like, no white authors. Like, I'm not saying
no.
that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that there mm-hmm. are amazing resources out there written by white authors. However, I think it's something to think about.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important when you're talking about authenticity and allowing your students to truly feel seen, they need to see people like them telling the stories about mm-hmm. experiences like their own. They need that.
That's good.
And they deserve that.
Yeah, that's good. I want to ask you, when you're incorporating literature into your classroom, what are your favorite ways to do that?
So I start with, I love books. So love my local library, and my local bookshop. So when I go into a bookstore, I kind of have an open mind. I'm not even mm-hmm. really, I don't usually have something like specific that I'm looking for. I let the books find me in a way. Mm. So I will first, usually it's the illustration that catches my eye or a title. And then I do look at the author. And then I look at the text. I look at the story and see if there are any musical concepts that I can pull from this story.
Mm.
And that's kind of how I do it. So sometimes books have like a repeated refrain that keeps yeah. coming back. That's so easy to incorporate with
us. Oh yeah, music. So fun.
Sometimes with those, I will create a melody or some type of orph instrumentation that we could do as the A section, and then read the opposite pages that don't have that repeated refrain as the B, and then we go back to the A every time that repeats. So I teach a lot of form through literature. Another thing that I love to do is find books that actually don't have words and kind of see what students, the stories that my students can create. Christian Robinson is a illustrator. Well, he's an artist, and then he started illustrating some books, and then he started writing his own. And one of his books is called Another, and there's no words. And I have students that just love that book because they see the story. I had a 5-year-old student who wasn't really reading yet, and she's like, "So then this," and she's like, "I'm like, girl, where did you're making these words?" And she just had the whole plot, and she created it. And then we talk about, okay, well, how can we make it musical? What could we do at this part? Oh, she's going up. What could we do?
I love it.
You know, she's going climbing up, and oh, okay, so now she's under the blankets. How could we make that sound? Or what would that? Mm. How could we make that musical? So kind of doing, I don't know. I'm a lot of people. It might think it's a little bit out of the box or a little too much, but those are kind of the things that I do when I'm finding literature. I'm not going to lie. There have been times when I'm like, okay, I need to specifically find this. Mm-hmm. Like I'm looking for a Native American story to teach, blah, 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 blah. So I do go sometimes looking very specifically, but the majority of the time I'm entering a bookstore, it's like with an open mind. And then they come, the lessons just come to you. They love just, they come.
Yes, you can do so much with books. Oh my gosh. There are books that already have action words. So if it's saying
movement, jump, oh my God.
Yes, jump, stomp, leap, whatever. Skip. I can't think of anything else right now. Wow. You know what I mean? Anything that tells the kids to do things, they can listen to the words and do what it says. Absolutely. So fun. I love, and then any books about composers, instruments, even modern day composers, showing, like you said, even about other cultures. These kids can't travel to other places, and there's so many different websites where they can explore music or see that the culture of that particular country. But being able to read a story, I mean, kids see themselves in stories, like you said, is so cool. Oh my gosh, I love all of that. Books is, and like you said, ways to make it inclusive with books when you're looking at the pictures. Do you look through the pictures too and try to pick out books with the different children in them, so they're not just, you know, so you're representing all the different cultures too that way?
Sometimes, yeah. And I think as of late, my student population is a huge portion of my student population is from the Middle East. So they're from, a lot of my students identify as Arabic, and a lot of my students are Muslim. And I really have been having a hard time finding books that show women and children in hijabs, and my girls need to see themselves. So I've been really like, oh man, I wish, like when there's a picture of a whole group and I'm like, oh, but there's no one in a hijab. That's not. So like I've been really trying to find, and then letting authors know, like, okay, most authors and illustrators are on social media. I love contacting them, and most have been really responsive to me. Like, hey, I noticed this story and you chose to illustrate somebody in a hijab. Thank you so much. My students will be able to see themselves and feel seen. Like, thank you. Like we are so connected at this time with social media and just the internet that can go a long way. And then, I mean, you are planting in a seed. Oh, that somebody saw that somebody needed that.
Yeah.
Okay. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I just went on a little tangent there, but.
No, you're good. So when you're thinking of bringing literature into your classroom, like you said, you let the books find you. And then after you find the book, do you just kind of figure out a way to incorporate it into a lesson for the upcoming week? Or is it just, or do you go, I will use this, not yet kind of situation? Or does it just depend?
It just depends. Like sometimes I'm like, I have an idea like, oh, I wanted to do something with Loud and Soft, and I saw a book that had like color on one page and not on the other. And I thought like, maybe I could do something. But then I read it because I had 5 minutes left in the class, and I was like, oh my God, this is so perfect for, I don't know, spoken versus melodic or something like that. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. So like I found that out by just reading it because we had 5 minutes left and I had no idea what I was going to do with it. Mm-hmm. So it's just a hodgepodge. My husband's like, you bought more books. So like, and that's just how I have like piles. I'm like, okay, I think I know where these ones are going to go, or these ones are specific to this, but
a lot of times
it's just like, this is on my wait list. And I just, mm-hmm. Oh my God, perfect. Mm-hmm, and then I just mm-hmm. go with it. Mm-hmm. And too, it's the kids. Like, I will think I have something that's awesome and then like read it to them and I have this whole idea and they take me somewhere way different with it.
Love it. Oh yeah. So, and that goes back to learning from your students. They can sometimes be the best teachers.
They are the best teachers. Oh my God, yeah.
Oh, love it. Have there been any books that they have asked you to read that they've been like, one of my favorite books is this?
Yes. So, I mean, it usually happens, and this is why I'm so huge on literature. I don't feel like enough, and I don't think it's like culturally specific to my student population. I think it's culturally like a generational thing. Mm. A lot of children are not being read to. It's not, parents don't have time. They're working. iPads are, tablets are a really easy, like, here. So like kids are not being read to. So like I take it upon myself, like this is my responsibility. I need to be reading to kids because they're not being read to. So to go back to your question, do children ask specifically about a book or X, Y, or Z? It tends to happen when I introduce a book in kindergarten and they love it. And then they come to me in second grade and like, do you remember that one book?
Aww.
Oh yeah, let's read it again. And then the fifth grade, do you remember that one book? Yeah, let's read it again.
Aww, I love it.
So I can't think of anything specific where I have students like, let's read this. But it's in the context of when we were in kindergarten. Do you remember mm-hmm. that one mm-hmm. story? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how it's been. And that's why mm-hmm. I think it's so important that we take on that responsibility, because when we are the seed, we plant seeds of love for music and understanding of music and importance of music, but we can also, while teaching musical concepts, plant a seed to love reading,
mm-hmm.
love literature. And it's not hard. Like I'm teaching all of the curriculum that I'm supposed to. I'm using this book as a additive to
mm-hmm.
teach whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, and some of the things are even as specific as one of my favorite books it's kind of like a rhyming
mm-hmm.
alliteration type book. And it's called All the World by Liz Garten Scanlon. And it is amazing. The images are beautiful, but all the world is here is the kind of repeated phrase. And I wrote a little melody. I wanted to have something in 6/8. So I wrote a little melody and I wanted it to end on mi, re, do. I wanted it to step right down. So those are the concepts I was teaching. We're going down, down, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But like I was able to kind of use that book as a tool to teach ending on do and mm-hmm. Melodic direction and just stepwise, you know, and then we practice what instruments can we play that pattern on? Mm-hmm. And then we go, we try it on the drum. Nope. Okay. We try it on this. We try it on our bodies,
mm-hmm.
kind of, you know? So we really, literature can be just a simple additive to what we do as musicians and music teachers.
Yeah. Yeah. I've talked to, I've had this conversation as well where music teachers are like, well, how do I bring literature into my music room? I already do so much. It's like, it's one more thing, but like you said, it's simple to weave it in. It could even just be before the kids leave, read them a story. Just like you said, I love when you hit the nail on the head with that. Cause you said there's a lot of kids that are not read to. They aren't. They just, that's just no, you know, it's just not done as much anymore.
It's where we are in the world, you know?
It's not
to blame parents. Like,
No. Yeah.
I'm not trying to do that at all because mm-mm. I don't have kids. I don't know what that, I don't know what that's like. And I don't know, like, I don't know if and when I do,
mm-hmm.
if I, like, here's an iPad. Like, I don't know.
Girl. But,
So I'm not bashing that at all. No. But I think that that's something to notice, because it is a truth about where we are in the world today. And, and being observant of that, we can help plant seeds of, because reading is a problem in our country. Like, we have to,
right.
Like, our kids are not reading ready. They're not reading. They don't have a love for reading. So why not use us as, we can totally add to that.
Oh, completely. Yeah. It doesn't, don't label yourself as, but I'm just the music teacher. No, you're a teacher. You're there to teach the kids. It doesn't matter what your label is. You bringing literature into your room, it doesn't matter if, what subject matter you teach. Every teacher can read to kids, even PE. Absolutely. They can read to kids, and they do. I love this conversation. And I want to ask you, is there any advice for elementary music teachers listening about anything we talked about or did not talk about today that you would like to offer advice about?
My biggest advice is to just be okay with change. I've just completed my sixth year, and I'm still a baby teacher, right? Like, I would not consider myself a expert in any way, or like you said, like, I've been teaching it this way for this long. Be flexible and be okay with change, because when you are able to accommodate and adapt, you are building a skill that is one of the best skills that you can have, that ability to be flexible, because children inevitably are going to be, we're constantly okay, we're not doing that anymore. I know a lot of teachers already are, but taking that idea and really spreading it across all that we do. Look at where we are right now. I have no idea what next month is going to look like for me, for my students, for my colleagues. And I think a lot of teachers in this nation are in the same boat. And when you sit and just want it, it can be really overwhelming, but I've tried to really take the approach of stepping back and just trying to be flexible and just be ready to change again change again, because that change is inevitable. It's part of the process of learning. I mean, that's how we learn too. Like, we don't just, like, it's the same thing. Like, we're forever learning. We're forever growing and building off of this previous knowledge, and then that's different now, and so now we change. Like, that's part of who we are as educators and music educators. So just being open as best as you can to just the idea of change, because it's there.
Oh, I love that. So good. Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah. I would love, before we go, for you to let everybody know where they can connect with you online.
Yes. And my neighbor is mowing the lawn, so I'm sorry if you hear some buzzing going by. you can find me on Facebook at Music with Mrs. Dunk. So Music with Mrs. and then D-U-N-C. It's like my last name shortened. And then on Instagram, it's the same, at Music with Mrs. Dunk. Twitter did not let me have enough letters, so I'm at Music Wit Mrs. Dunk. So at Music, WITMRSDUNC. And you can also email me at musicwithmrsdunk@gmail.com.
Awesome. I'll include all that in the show notes. No, I'm laughing because Twitter did the same to me. Everywhere I'm the domestic musician. Instagram, I'm just my name. But then Twitter, I was like, well, what am I going to do? The Dom musician. And I was like, whatever. It's what it is. Like, I'm like, why are you so stingy with the words? Come on.
I know. And I was like, one letter. Okay, whatever.
That's totally fine. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. This has been such an amazing conversation. I really do appreciate it.
Yes, I'm so glad I could be here, and it was wonderful talking with you and sharing some of the things that are closest to me. So I appreciate you.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much.
Well, hey there. Thank you so much for listening into the Elementary Music Teacher Podcast. There is an exclusive Facebook group just for listeners of this podcast and any elementary music teacher called the Elementary Music Teacher Community Facebook Group. Come on over and join us there where we have conversations around the podcast episodes and encourage each other each and every week. And also head to my website, thedomesticmusician.com. I have some free resources there that you can download to help you gain traction in your classroom today, as well as the blog and the membership site and all kinds of other goodies to help you keep going in your music teaching journey. I cannot wait to keep connecting with you and encouraging you and spurring you on in your journey of teaching elementary music. Hang in there, have an amazing week, and I will see you soon.